Blog Talk I like that. Radio. There's a little extra. 3, 2, and you were like, 3, 2. And what are we doing? Oh, we're doing the show. Okay.
We're on air.
Yeah, well, we've been just chit-chatting back and forth, and if you're on 1000 Mics, you've already heard some of that, but it actually starts quite a few minutes before that time, and about a minute before we bring 1000 Mics in, and then we were, you know, sitting here waiting for the countdown on Blog Talk Radio, and here we are. The number to call, if you want to get on the program, which will be announced in a minute anyway, but the number to call is area code 646-727-3235. Call us direct. Get on the switchboard on hold, whatever it is, and we will bring you on the air. And we're going to discuss wine. We have Ron with us again. Great. And as we do every Thursday, except the intermediate Thursdays where, you know, things happen.
Where we have things to do. And we
yes.
just make it.
Coming at the last minute, you know, and okay.
It happens. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. We will be back in 1 minute, and we'll start the show and see if we have any callers come up. 646-727-3235. If I said it too fast, rewind the tape and... Wait, oh, there we go.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, I'm trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Ron in the house. Well, wherever. he has his broadcasting. They are, no, because of the snowfall and everything that we've had, the icy conditions, they... Actually, we haven't had any, so I don't really know where they're at. But, I heard them clapping in the background somewhere. Anyway.
I wondered, bus people used to hear, and we used to get them all. And it's a beautiful night, too, here.
It sure is.
Wesley Chapel, Florida.
Either one.
Yeah, all of them.
Unless they went to your broadcast booth, because we each have our own broadcast booths. He's at
right,
his
yeah.
similar location. I'm at mine, and maybe you know something happened. They went over to yours, so that maybe they're still working their way down there.
It's driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you never know.
Never.
Coming up at the winery, let me dish this out real quick at the top of the program here. You have a wine class coming up in 2 days on Saturday.
That's right, this Saturday.
March 20th. You got to check that out from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. And it's really a great class. You got to check this out. You cover everything you want to know about wine, and plus there's a tasting as well. And what else do you have? You have
pass outs. We have snacks. We have... it's just a fun time. Wine 101 is not wine making. It's wine 101 information and stuff. But a lot of fun.
Yeah, excellent. And so that's this Saturday. Definitely want to check it out. And if we have a little break halfway through, we'll throw that in there again. But no wine fest this week. Yeah, because you have the wine class. So everything's good. And you want to check out the winery, go to 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes. Give them a call directly at area code 813-996-2113. Email corp@floon.com. That's C-O-R-P, the at sign. What is that? Shift 2. FLEWN.com. Or visit the website. Excellent, excellent website. Click picture. Very, very well thought out and a great website. www.floridaestateswines.com. And right here on Blog Talk Radio on 1000 Mics. Okay, that was my 5 minutes. Now it's your turn.
Okay. Well, Mike and I were talking before we came on air here. We were going to do North America tonight, and we were talking and think we're going to do something different here. I'm going to finish up the Middle East and a few countries that we missed here and there.
And it probably won't take me all hour, and so I'll get a little bit of other small information I'll pass on to you tonight. But we decided that we are going to start North America next week, and we're going to talk about each state individually. Every state in the United States has a winery. You can travel around this country and visit wineries in every state and probably never repeat yourself. There's so many of them popping up and so many of them going on. So starting next week, I'm going to start emailing wineries in the different states and see if somebody from different states would like to come on and join us during our program. And what that was going to do is let them talk about their state, let them talk about their winery. I'll ask them questions about growing and grapes they use and the types of grapes and conditions that they might face and weather and stuff like that. And so what we will do is cover one or two states every week, depends on how much time we have and if we have someone that's going to call in. If we have someone that's going to call in, it might take a little bit longer. If we don't, then I'll tell you about the state and cover it and about different things and all that. So starting next week, United States will be our topic, but that will probably run for, a few weeks, actually, quite a few weeks in there, depending on how much response we get from different wineries. And, Mike and I just were talking about, I'm adding too many vowels. And
one more week of Europe.
Yeah, I know. It's all these Indian and Japanese things. Mm-hmm. Mike and I were talking about the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun. So if I were called by someone and asked to join, I think I would jump on it. So let's hope that we do get responses from different wineries over the next few weeks, and we can expand this out and really find some interesting facts and things about the different wineries that exist around the country and the different conditions and everything.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So with that being said, and a little tease about what's coming up in the future, let's go back to today. I'm going to cover a few things here that we haven't talked about yet. Depending on the time, I'm going to talk about a couple of other things just to fill in time more than anything. But first, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes and stuff growing over in, we talked about Vietnam and Cambodia and some areas over in that part of the world. We did not... Vietnamese was one. Korea was another one we talked about. Thailand. We didn't finish, though. There's three more places that I want to cover today, this evening, is India and China and Japan, the wine growing and winemaking in those three countries. And then I think I'm going to tell you a little bit about England. We didn't talk about England at all when we were talking about Europe or any part of the world, and just a little bit of information on England I'm going to pass on to you. So let's jump into this. India, Indian wines. India has a history of winemaking that goes back, the Persian traders sometime. Oh, I got a phone call right there next to me here. Oh, and it's from New York. Amazing. I was just talking about wines from different states, and somebody's calling me from New York.
That was quick. All right.
I like it. Caller ID said New York. I'm going, whoa. Yeah.
The entire state calling you.
The entire state of New York's calling me. But India, the Persian traders back in the 4th century B.C. Introduced grapes and winemaking into India. So it's a long, long history. They believe the early plantings were mostly used for table grapes and for grape juice, more so than making any type of wine. But then back in the 2nd and 1st centuries B.C., a lot of the tribes that were traveling around the area were starting to make more and more of a an alcoholic drink, not really wine as we know it, but a type of wine. And that lasted for many years. The religious groups had an alcoholic drink that was wine-related, called a surah, which was probably made with rice, a type of rice wine, and was fermented with honey instead of any type of sugars or stuff. Was fermented with honey. First mentioning of actually grape-based wine in India was around the 4th century BC in some writings of a minister, a chief minister of an emperor of India, and I would tell you his name, but I would probably destroy it, Chandragupta Maurya. He didn't so much talk about how great it was, but he condemned the use of alcohol and grape wine and the teachings of the India religions said that it was not good and it should not be drank and it was something that should be avoided. Centuries passed and wine became something that the nobility, the noble class, would enjoy. The lower class people, and India is very caste oriented. You have your caste system that probably the best known caste system in the world in India, and the peoples are divided up into their different levels of nobilities and middle class and lower class. The lower class or the lower caste drank an alcohol made from wheat, barley, or corn, and this was their substitution for grape wine. The only real grape wine that was drank again during that period and for many centuries there was by the noble class of people, the living in the castles and in the empire there. Under Muslim rule, alcohol was basically prohibited in dietary laws and rules of Islam. So a lot of the wine wasn't allowed because of this. And the lower class did their barley and wheat type drinks simply because nobody found out about it. But then in the 16th century, a Mughal ruler by the name of Jahangir became a big fan of brandy wine. And because he was such a fan of it, it started to lose some of its religious taboos for that area because the emperor found that it was good. The centuries that followed there was off and on styles. A port style of wine came out for a while. Fortified wine soon started to take hold, and those became more and more popular and stronger because of the brandy. Vineyards were starting to be planted in different areas throughout India, Kashmir area, the Surat area, Baramati area. And then in 1883, Calcutta International Exhibition, which is like a world fair, was held, which showcased a lot of Indian grape wine. They were really starting to become well known in that part of the world. It was wine was starting to be exported a little bit, and the country was drinking wine. And in the late 1800s, it was the Indian wine industry really catching hold. But about the time that it was reaching its peak, it was hit by the phylloxera epidemic, and it devastated the vineyards. And again, for those of you who are not familiar, phylloxera is a little small bug that gets into the roots of grapevines, eats them, and kills them. And there's nothing you can do about that. They will die. And phylloxera has been spread around the world originally. Actually, I hate to say this, but originally from the United States, and it was spread around the world by exchanging plants and stuff like that. So the phylloxera epidemic hit the Indian wine industry, and it devastated in the late 1800s. It has been trying to recover ever since then, and it has been quite difficult, actually, for them to get the full recovery. They've been battling it. But then religious groups started to come in, and public opinion against alcohol started to take effect and even hurt the industry that much more. Back in the 1950s, a lot of the India states prohibited alcohol and the use of alcohol, and because of that, a lot of vineyards were uprooted and plowed under. The ones that did stay were converted to table grapes or raisin production. And some areas that did keep their wine and did continue to make wine continued to make very sweet, very high alcoholic wines so that they could slide by the rules and the regulations. But then in the early 1980s, French winemakers came in to India and started to import the Vitis vinifera grape, which is the varieties we know, like Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir, Angie Blanc, and started to make some still wines and some sparkling wines. And other wineries started to follow suit, and the Indian wine industry has started to boom again, simply because of the French influence on it. So a little history of Indian wine and Indian grapes there. Climate in India is not really well suited for grape growing. The summer season is long and hot. Monsoons are prevalent. I'm afraid to say we're all aware of the monsoons that's in India. The monsoons are very prevalent in the summer, so you have to watch where you plant and all that. Many of the India's wine regions fall within a tropical climate band, so it really is not good growing conditions there. That's why a lot of the vineyards are planted in a higher altitude in the mountains and stuff of India, which benefits from cooler air and protects it from the winds and stuff. Altitude for vineyards in India is like 660 feet above sea level, which is about 200 meters above sea level. That's the lowest. Some of them go up as high as 3,300 feet, or that's about 1,000 meters in the Kashmir area. Summer temperatures, extremely hot, 113 degrees Fahrenheit, 45 degrees Celsius. Wintertime lows, not real, real cold, 45, 46 degrees Fahrenheit, about 8 degrees Celsius. So, not the greatest conditions in the world for grape growing in India. Growing season, June to August, as it is most of Northern Hemisphere. The regions of India where they do most of it, again, is in the central and northern parts of the country and on the ranges, the mountain ranges and the hills and stuff. There are some vineyards found on the plateau called the Deccan Plateau, but again, humidity really does limit a lot of the plantings and a lot of the grapes. Because of the heat and humidity, it really affects the grape growing too, in the fact that all the grapes have to be lifted off the ground with high humidity. And I mentioned this last week when we were talking about some other areas, Vietnam and Thailand, with high humidity. The grapes being lifted off the ground to grow keeps them from keeps air flowing through them. They use bamboo wires and wire to raise up the vineyard so that the canopies can get air to it and put air into the grapes and stuff, and keeps the diseases and the rot and the molds out of the grapes. Also protects it from the sun getting too actually sunburn on the grapes, which they can. Irrigation is used in almost all the growing irrigation being the most popular. And harvest is usually done by hand because of the way the vineyards are set up. most of the harvest is hired out and done by hand. India has a lot of indigenous table grape varieties, though, and some of them can be used for wine production. Some of them I've never heard of before. It's one particular one, Anabeshahi, another one, Arkaveiki, and Arkashayam are the most popular ones. There's a couple of non-native grapes that come from other countries around there. Bangalore Blue, which is an Isabella, another name for it, and Gulabi, Black Muscat. The Turkish grape, Sultana, S-U-L-T-A-N-A, is really the most widely planted grape in India. It covers more than half of the total acreage. And total acreage in India right now is right around 150,000 acres, about 61,000 hectares throughout the country. There are some French varieties planted in India, but not planted well, not strong plantings of them. Sauvignon Blanc, Zinfandel, Chenin Blanc, Claret, and some Chardonnay plantings. I have found throughout all the times we've been talking about plantings of grapes and all that around the world, Chardonnay is planted just about everywhere. It has to be one of the most widely planted grapes in the world, because just about everywhere we talk about Chardonnay grape is planted, which is just, it amazes me. The white table, white wine grape in India is called the Sahyadri, and is made predominantly from the Chardonnay grape with a blend of Angus Blanc and Thompson seedless grapes. It makes for a semi-sweet wine that's very they also make a Cabernet Sauvignon with a blend of Bangalore Purple, which gives it a little bit stronger flavor and a distinct nose of something like a Cabernet Franc, from what I've read. It's just I've tried to find some Indian whites, and I couldn't find any, and I'm sure they're out there. I just had a real hard time finding them. So these are just some of the wines and stuff. Now, one other thing, we can't talk about Indian wines without talking about the pairing of the food and wine. And India uses a lot of curry, and curry is a very strong spice, hot, strong spice. And most wines will not hold up well with curry. This is one of the reasons why a lot of wines in India aren't really made to have with food, since curry is many different types of food there. The Madeira wine does go with curry, but as it says, if you drink too much of the Madeira wine, then you're going to not be able to walk after you eat. But with most areas there, they found that because of the curry influence on most of the food, beer is drank a lot more than wine with meals. So wine is really not matched up with a lot of meals because of the influence of the spiciness of the curry that you find in it. Well, we are busy here tonight. Not only did I get a phone call, but I've also got someone knocking on the door. Wow. I know.
By the bus people.
China. I want to talk a little bit about Chinese wines in China right now. The little history of Chinese wines. China has made wine for Chinese grapes. Grape wine has been dated back to more than 4,600 years ago. You're looking at about close to 3,000 years BC. They have done archaeology research all around China and throughout the countries and stuff, and they have found a couple of archaeological sites in the northeast corner of the country that have found remnants of alcoholic beverages, including grape wine, rice wine, and mead, and then several other mixed beverages that these wines are part of. So there's been a lot of history of wine in China. out of some of these sites that they found out of ceramic ports, seven they have found that were actually had grape wine in it, and a type of grape seeds were remnants of grape seeds were also discovered. So the wine in India, in China, has been around for centuries and centuries. It's just been something that's taken hold of for a long time, and which is really odd because the latitude of the China areas that they grow grapes in is the same as the latitude of the south of France. So you're really looking at almost a perfect area for growing grapes. And it's funny that we don't hear more about the Chinese wine because of the good area of growing grapes. The modern Chinese grape growing, we can go back to the late 1800s. They think that Confucius drank wine a lot too, and that's and some of the documents and some of the things that they found that Confucius was an imbiber in the grape in the fermented grape. Most of the areas are the grapes are not edible, just a not even known grapes. They're not the classic ones that were going. It's just some indigenous grapes for the for China. But a Chinese diplomat decided to start his own winery in the late 1800s. And he imported more than 500,000 plants from the United States and Europe to start the winery. And in fact, his company still exists. Known as the Changyi Pioneer Wine Company, and it's believed to be the 10th largest winery in the world. The French have started to import a lot of wine into China in the 1980s. The company Remy Martin ventured into China and set up a joint venture with them on making wine and spirits, which is one of the biggest Remy companies in the world for spirits and wine, for brandies and cognacs and stuff. So Remy Martin has started to send a lot of people and development into China. Most of the wines that have been exported in the last couple of decades is it hasn't been real good. It wasn't until after the year about 2000 that the economic boom hit, and China had enough money to start buying a lot of their own wines. They were exporting some, but it wasn't keeping up with what they would like to do. But when they started to buy a lot more wine within the country, it became it started to actually boom, a lot more disposable income for the people, and which increased the popularity of French wines in China tremendously. Another country company, a Great Wall Wine Company, has risen in prominence over the last few years, and actually about 90% of all grape wine now is consumed locally in China. It hasn't been exported for a long time. Most of the wine was being exported, and now because of the economic boom, and they are really surviving quite well with the economic boom over there, continuing their exports. A long tradition of Chinese wines, including alcoholic beverages, not just grapes, but a lot of alcoholic beverages. And because of this, China has a lot of good areas. Again, like I told you, the latitude is the same as south of France. And because of the latitude being south of France, there's a lot of countries, Canada and France being the two main ones, that are opening up wineries in China. With joint ventures in China. Chinese wine is being exported some. You can find it in California and Oregon fortune, not a lot. Basically, from what I've noticed and read and actually talked to people, Chinese wine is looked upon about like Chilean wine and Australian wine were treated a few years ago. People just sort of, it was amusing, but nothing to really take seriously. And now we can look how far those countries have came as far as wine and quality in this country and how they're being sold. So it wouldn't surprise me in a few years we're going to start seeing a lot more Chinese wine popping up because a lot more money, a lot more effort has been put into it to increase the sales of it. One region, and I cannot pronounce these Chinese names. Xinjiang. It's in western China, Xinjiang. It is one of the first areas areas there are recorded back to making wine in 138 BC, possibly even earlier. There's a Yang Dynasty shows a lot of wine being produced in China. The Ming Dynasty, there was a lot of grapes being planted and grown in throughout China. So it's the amazing amount of wine and grapes being grown in China. I was absolutely astonished by how much is being done in China as far as wine goes. I would love to get a hold of some Chinese wine. Being here in Florida, we're probably going to be one of the last countries, our last states in this country that will get Chinese wines. But I was absolutely amazed what we're doing with the quality of wine they're putting out there. The annual per capita consumption of wine in China is only 0.35 liter, which is about a 375 milliliter bottle, about half of the regular wine bottles, about that size. That's about the annual per capita consumption of wine. But you have to realize, too, the number of people divided by what's drank and all that, that's going to throw the numbers off a little bit. There are wine merchants in China that predict by within the next 50 years, the quality of Chinese wines will rival that of the Bordeaux in France, which is really quite a prediction. But at one time, nobody thought California was going to do any good either, and they have shown that they can rival and be up there with the wines throughout the world. In 2004, wine production in China was 370,000 tons. That's increased 15% over the previous year, and it has continued to increase anywhere from 10 to 12% since then, too. It the market has grown tremendously in the last 4 or 5 years. Regions like outside of Beijing, which is the capital of Yantai, Zhangjiakou, Yibin, Tangoa, Taiyuan, areas throughout the whole country have exploded. There are over 173 wines produced in China right now, with 140 wineries throughout the Yangtze Penglai area has over 140 wineries just in itself, which produces about 40% of all Chinese wines. The white wines usually is a big seller. Prefer that over beer. Beer still being the main beverage for men, although that is starting to lose it. Red wine is starting to become more and more the drink for men in China. And so it's exploding, absolutely exploding. 80% of the vineyards produce red wine, 20% produce white wine. And it's just becoming a phenomenal growth item in China. So it's really interesting. If you have access to Chinese wine, email me. Let me know what you think of it. I've never had the pleasure or the opportunity to have a Chinese wine, and I really would like to try some. And there is none. I've looked, and there is none here in Florida. So, But if you have somebody out there listening and you hear about you hear this and you've had Chinese wines, please email me or get in touch with me somehow and let me know what you think of it. So I'm going to take a short break here and let let you know about our class coming up on this Saturday, and we'll be back with you in just a second here.
And I'm going to have to do it live.
Oh, okay.
March 20th. Oh, wait. Okay. March 20th is coming Saturday.
Did I wake you up? I'm sorry.
No. Did you get my Skype message? Anyway.
No.
Okay.
Yes,
I will fix that. I'll just upload the recorded version. So if you're on 1,000 mics, for some reason it went down because I got an email from it saying there was no audio. I was like, there is audio because we connect the same way we connect to Blog Talk Radio. But that's not the wine tasting class. The wine tasting class is March 20th. That's in 2 days. This coming Saturday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Florida Estates Winery. There's plenty of topics that are covered. Let's see. There's a brief history of wines, the wine grape varietals, the diseases in wine grapes, wine glass styles and uses, cork history, the evolution and use covered, wine tasting process and scoring, rating the wines, and of course a sample of the wines and discussing each in detail. It's a great class. You have to attend it. And you know, for those of you before you go up north back home, this is a great stop along the way off Interstate 75. That's exit 285. That is State Road 52. You're going to go west 4 miles, and you'll see the signs there for the winery, and you go up the little road there, and there's plenty of parking, and you got to check it out. Go to the wine class this Saturday, March 20th, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. for wine class at Florida Estates Winery, and the cost is $20 prepaid, $25 prepaid, and then that would be $30
Sure.
Okay,
right.
Cool. And that includes the wine tasting, snacks. And do you still get the logo wine glass?
Yes, you do.
Oh, wow. Hmm. Okay. Yeah. And, check it out. And it's a great time. But when you go to wine class, you learn quite a bit there. And it's very entertaining. And you put on a great show over there. And it's wonderful. So check it out. Anyway, that's my brief 15-second advertising for it.
Yeah. We don't have a recording for that. We do have a recording for the
Wine Fest. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I need to do one for. It was such a long break in between them. I was like, oh, okay, I'll just wait.
Yeah.
And then this one came up. So okay. Yeah,
oh well.
Yeah, I'll get it. One of these days.
We're not professional. We never is. Tried to be.
After a year. Still training.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. All right, and back to the program.
Back to the program. Japanese wine. This is the Japanese wine. Again, we're looking at a long, long history of Japanese grape growing. Back 718 B.C., there was wine made from local grapes that were throughout the country and stuff like that. A lot of the grapes... were native grapes, I think, in the country there. That's where they trace it back. But the first documented case of wine consumption in Japan was in the 16th century. Now, this was actually a written documented case when the Jesuit missionaries from Portugal came over and brought wine with them, or grapes and made wine and all that. The Portuguese wine was called shintetsu. That's combining the Japanese word tintu, or shintu in Japanese, meaning red, and shu, meaning shu, meaning liquor. So just a red liquor is what it was called. Western culture started to catch on in the late 1860s, and wine started to become a staple in Japan. It started to be made more and more during the period here. American grape varieties formed the core of the Japanese wine making business and the grape growing business. And then, as happens so often in the late 1800s, phylloxera hit the Japanese grape industry. and it, again, as it usually does, devastated it. The wine business and viticulture business just crashed after Flaktra. Pretty much ended it for what they were doing. World War II, obviously, came in and stopped a lot of the winemaking and grape growing in there. But then after World War II, the grapes were replanted and wine started to be made. Usually a sweeter style wine, a lot of sugars and honeys added to it, made for a sweet wine. A Suntory wine or a Red Jewel port wine, a very sweet wine. And this trend continued until the mid-70s or so, when more wine started being imported from Europe and from the United States. Then in the 70s and 80s, a group of Japanese winemakers started to do winemaking in the European and United States style. They were actually more in the Western style, United States style of winemaking. They were getting grapes from France and European varieties, and they were planting them, but they were doing a lot of winemaking based on California techniques and California styles, and actually doing quite good with it, quite well. The specific case of Japanese consumers went to organic wine, and organic production grew quite a bit because of that. The tax on wine started to increase in Japan, though, so that it really put a slowdown on what they were doing. The tax of the alcoholic beverages in Japan jumped up a lot. From about 2002, they started to really concentrate on making Japanese wines using Japanese grapes. It was a big movement. Japanese wines using Japanese grapes, 100% Japanese grapes were the thing, and that started to open it up for any individual winemakers from small vineyards and small plots to big companies. You could take care of, you can accommodate any of those as long as you were doing Japanese wine, Japanese grapes. Again, Japan is a lot of influence from the water and the ocean, very high humidity in the summers because of the influence and where they're located with water all around it. And again, humidity is horrible for grapes. What it does is holds the moisture into it, and molds start developing within the grape clusters and stuff. So, like they do in a lot of areas over there, they were making the vineyards in a higher stall so that they were raising them up off the ground so that ventilation can get through them and keep them air flowing, stop as much of the mold and rot that they possibly could, which also requires a lot of hand picking. There's a lot of hills, a lot of jagged terrain in Japan, and a lot of the vineyards that planted their grapes on the slopey hillsides to try to receive as much sunlight as they can, and also to protect heavy snowfalls. They're planting on the side away from the snowfalls. And from what I understand, it moves from the west to the east. So it comes across China and Russia and China right toward Japan. And so a lot of this is the vineyards are planted on the eastern slopes of the mountains and hills, which helps protect it from the weather coming from the west. The major wine producing area is Hokkaido. In the Yamahashi Prefecture and Yamahashi Prefecture. Yamahashi Prefecture is a big, big wine making region, company, and area. They have been planting grapes for 25, 30 years now. the main influence nationwide has been a one village, one specialty movement, meaning basically specializes in one type of wine or one type of grape and one type of wine. And you know, there's like 12 of them here, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the names, you know, the Japanese names. I know I would destroy them. But each of them has their own unique wine, their own unique style from the regions. The most common grape variety grown in Japan is called the Muscat Belly A, and it is a red wine grape developed in Japan by a Zenbei Kawakami. He was alive from 1868 to 1944. And his goal was to develop a grape that would grow and do well in the Japanese climate, and he did. He mixed the belly-type grape with a Muscat Hamburg grape, and he came up with this Muscat Belly A. It is known as the Black Queen country. The characteristics are very grape juice-like flavor. It's used for a lot of the sweet wine, and in recent years, though, they've been trying to do a drier style of it. They blended it with some Western grapes, Cabernets and stuff, and they're getting a more of a Bordeaux style, full-bodied Bordeaux style, and with other blends and stuff, they're coming up with a smoother Burgundy style. So the Muscat Belly A has really been quite a versatile grape for Japan, and it really is catching on quite well. Japan does have what they call a mark of origin. Now, this is the system of marking the grapes, marking the wines as being from Japan, being from certain areas. Something like the French Appellation de Controle or the American Viticulture Area designations. Japan actually has a system in practice that shows that it can be labeled as Japanese wine, and that anything fermented in Japan can be called Japanese wine. And this gives it a little bit more of a quality, if you will, a little bit more of a designation that they've adopted. Pakistan. I'm going to hit a few countries quickly here before we end. There's other stuff I was going to talk to you about tonight, but I guess I was going to tell you a little bit about mead, honey mead, and I was going to tell you a little bit of meritage. But Pakistan. Quickly, Pakistan has really... The sales of alcoholic drinks in Pakistan, and alcoholic drinks overall, and wine particularly, have really slowed down in Pakistan. The economy has hit Pakistan very poorly, or very hard. So it's a very poor country, and a lot of the alcoholic drinks have taken a secondary importance to the country, particularly wine. The government has... actually loosened up a lot of its controls on alcohol in the country. They have cut back a little bit on the taxes that they've been charging, but it still hasn't helped Pakistan a whole lot. They do make wine that is primarily used within the country in restaurants. A lot of restaurants have contracts with local wineries to make wine just for them or for resorts or you know, vacation spots and stuff. And this is really what most of the Pakistani wine is used for. You don't get a lot of demand for alcohol other than in places like that in Pakistan. Very little Pakistani wine is exported, probably because it is so specialized for the stores and shops. And not a lot of it is drank outside of the specialty shops, the restaurants, the resorts and stuff.
So, again, I didn't see much of the great varieties or anything in Pakistan. I'm sure it's a lot like India as far as climate and everything goes, and I'm sure that they do a lot of other stuff about the same as India. Israel. I didn't cover Israel when we were talking previously, and I do want to talk a little bit about Israeli wines. When you talk about Israel, you have to talk about the Holy Land, which is basically, all around Israel. And obviously wine has been produced for many, many, many years. Jesus' first miracle was turning wine into water. Wine, listed in the Bible. I did some searching. About 150 gallons is what he turned into wine. I didn't realize it was that much quantity. I thought it was less. And it was good wine. It was actually stated in there that one of the guests said that the host of the parties usually serve the good wine first and wait and serve the bad wine last because people have already drank so much they can't tell the difference. And yet this was the best wine he's ever tasted. So the wine that Jesus made from the water really was a very good, high-quality wine. And there was numerous other suggestions, numerous other references to wine throughout the Bible. Noah planted vineyards. There was stated where Noah planted vineyards. Jewish history continues to celebrate wine and viticulture. And wine in Israel is not solely for the traditional holidays. For many years, it was used for traditional holidays, and it has gotten away from that now. It's being used for a lot of other purposes. We think of wine from Israel, we normally think of the sugary, sweet, grape juice type wines, kosher wines that are very sweet. They have gotten away from that. They're starting to make some wines now that are winning national and international awards and accolades continuously. They're using the vinifera grape and starting to be known throughout the world in the qualities and styles of wine. There are over 20 major wineries, big wineries in Israel, with over 120 or so smaller ones. Big wineries are popping up all over the place. Most notable big wineries are in the Golan Heights, called the Golan Heights Winery. There's another one called Carmel Winery, Barkin, Domaine Costel. A lot of big name wineries are popping up all over Israel now. The great varieties that they use have really are the ones we're familiar with. Actually, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Syrah, Merlot, Zinfandel, Pinot Noir, these are doing quite well there. They are being planted in up on elevation, a little bit away from the heat of the valleys and stuff. They're being planted a little bit more up on the hills, which again gives them a little bit of a little bit more of a chance to survive, getting out of the heat of the valleys. And they're also using trellising systems to stop the humidities and heat from causing the grapes to fungus or molds. The white varieties used there, Chardonnay, like you can pretty much count on everywhere in the world, Sauvignon Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Riesling. Israel wines, we think of kosher, but the majority are kosher. Kosher means fit or proper in pure Hebrew, a pure wine. Wines that are labeled kosher are made with strict adherences to interpretation of the Old Testament dietary guidelines and are uniquely labeled as kosher, and the rabbi checks and be sure that they're done properly. So if you see either a K for kosher on an Israeli bottle of wine or an OU
which means Orthodox Union on an Israeli wine. That means that it's kosher. Another term used for kosher is, and I apologize if I mispronounce this, mefushal, M-E-V-U-S-H-A-L, mefushal. This term is actually the wines that have been flash pasteurized and cannot that can be appropriately handled by someone that is not Jewish. So a lot of Israeli wines are kosher wines, or ones that you will find that are kosher wines. Appalachians, Galilee, northern part, northern regions, produces some of the top wines out of Israel. Judean hills, close to Bethlehem and Jerusalem. The crisp nights make for some great wines there. Shimshon or Samson, these are widely planted in the region of Israel. It's almost 40% of the nation's grapes being grown in the Shimshon region. Largest percentage are harvested here, the Barkan harvest. Negev, it's more of a desert area, but it does, it's being watered and irrigated there, and they're making some very nice wines out of this region. Shamron or Samaria, this region is the largest grape growing region in Israel. Not only great wines, but great for wines, but also grapes for table and for raisins. And they have, Israel has combined the qualities of old world practices and new world practices, and they really are starting to put out some nice wines at a nice price point that people can enjoy now. Nothing that you can't find a lot of places. You can find Israeli wines a lot of different places. And so that ends this one. I was going to talk a little bit about England, but I might just cover that next week before we go on, because it's interesting. It's just a short bit of information.
Yeah, okay.
But there we go. That's thank you. Oh, got some bus people came in.
That was a city bus.
Oh, was it? City bus. All right.
Okay, so I put a shout out on our on Blog Talk Radio on our show page just to see if there's any U.S. winemakers, wineries that would like to get in on the program and to contact you. And so if you're out there listening, which we hope you are, then contact them and get on the program.
Yeah, we'd love to have you. Really, really would.
And we're not going to start randomly on different locations.
No. Yeah, we decided if we did that, we'd never find out where we were.
Well, we'll start with states that begin with the letter Z. So,
yeah. Let's see, Zealand and
Zealand.
Zephyr Hills.
Oh yeah, there you go. Wow, that's individual. That's really detailed. Okay, we have basically a minute. Let's. I've got 2 minutes on the clock here, but
I got about 2 minutes here.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll start on that next week and do a little bit of England, and we'll get the issue fixed with 1,000 Mics. So you didn't catch us live, but you will be hearing this if you are on 1,000 Mics and you're hearing this show. This is a pre-recorded show. Oh, I got 90 seconds. It just said that. Okay, cool. So we'll see you all next Thursday. Ron, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you again, Mike. Appreciate
very,
it.
Very good information. And it's always entertaining, always educational. It's all about wine. And we're going to close out the show. We'll see you all. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, 1,000 Mics, delayed listening. And we'll see. Yeah.
Sorry we lost you, 1,000 Mics.
Yeah, it said there was no audio. I don't know. But it was okay to begin with, but I don't know. It just dropped. And we'll do part of the... we'll do part of the goodbye right now. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. We've got 1 minute.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening.
Yep, less than 1 minute.
Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDog1. That's D-A-W-G